so the path that we look at this weekend is this, the movement from the root of our being, from Keter, that is the crown and the root of our being, into the experience of Chokmah, which is the creative will, the manifestation. So it's the movement really from the mystery of the deep root of things, the deep home, to the activity of the universe. To the activity of the universe. So we're moving from, in this path, this is the Hebrew letter that applies to this path, is the letter Aleph. In Arabic, it's the letter Alif. It is the first letter, the beginning. So here we enter into the place where that is both the end and the beginning. The two Gordon Lightfoot songs which popped up this morning, in a way, bookend both things. So you've got the minstrel of the dawn. We have the minstrel of the dawn, and this place of beginnings. And then, when reading my mind, we're looking at endings. We're looking at it's describing regrets, endings, the loss. So the movement really in this path is between that sense of that which is eternal, that which is unchanging, and that which constantly changes. Well, Foster Case, the Tao initiate, did a meditation upon this path, which I'm just going to read you. Meditation on the Aleph. I am, without beginning, without end, older than night or day, younger than the newborn babe, brighter than light, darker than darkness, beyond all things and creatures, yet fixed in the heart of everyone. From me the shining worlds flow forth, to me all at last return. Yet to me neither men nor angels may draw close, for I am known only to myself. Ever the same is my innermost being, absolutely one, complete, whole, perfect, always itself, eternal, infinite, ultimate, formless, indivisible, changeless. Of all existences, I am the source, the continuation and the end. I am the germ, I am the growth, I am the decay. All things and creatures I send forth. I support them while yet they stand without. And when the dream of separation ends, I cause their return unto myself. I am the life and the wheel of the law, and the way that leads to the beyond. There is none else. I am the fire of mind which divides itself into the superior and inferior, and puts on a robe of flesh to come down. I am the vital principle of all that is. Nothing is that does not live, and of that life I am the source. As it is written, first the stone, then the plant, then the animal, then the human. But before the stone I am the fire, distributed equally in space, nowhere absent, filling all. And before the fire, hidden within it, I am the pure knowing, from which all forms flow forth. Apart from me, there is neither wisdom nor knowledge nor understanding. Into every state of knowledge do I enter, into false knowledge as well as into true. So I am not less the ignorance of the deluded than the wisdom of the sage. For what you call ignorance and folly is my pure knowing, imperfectly expressed through an uncompleted image of my divine perfection. Woe to those who condemn these my works unfinished. Those who presume to judge are themselves incomplete. Through many a fiery trial of sorrow must they pass, till the clear beauty of my wisdom shines out from their hearts like a light burning in a lamp of alabaster. I am the doer of all. Nothing moves but by my power. Mine is the healing influence flowing down from consecrated hands. Mine the venom of the adder's fang. Nothing falls but by me. And whatever rises up, mine is the power that lifts up. My presence is the substance of all things. I am the snow on the mountain heights. I am the fruitful loam in the valley depths. I am gold and silver of the temple vessels. I am the mud on sandals left by the faithful at the temple gate. See me and regard me equally in all, O Israel, and you will see indeed. For seeing thus, shall you see too that nothing is or can be my antagonist. All and in all, shall I fight myself? Who has power to defeat or limit the very source of power? Know then that all sense of conflict is the shadow play of ignorance. Wait with patience on me, your Lord, and in my appointed time will I make clear what now is dark, and show before you straight and true a path of safety, in the very place where now an abyss of terror seems to open at your feet. I am the beginning of all beginnings, checked by neither time nor space, held by no bonds of name or form, present everywhere, centering the full perfection of my exhaustless power. I am your Lord, O Israel, and Lord of countless hosts. Seek me in the Holy of Holies, in the heart of the true temple, on the holy mountain. Behold, I am with you always, and I never sleep. I am the height above all heights. My descent reaches below all depths. Yet am I poised forever between the height and the depth in perfect balance. Consider me under the aspect of Aleph, where you will find height and depth and the path that joins them for descent and return. Aleph, in truth am I, the ox of solar fire, whose radiance lights up the world, whose life breath ebbs and flows in creatures great and small, whose power takes form in all the acts of men, of beasts, of plants, yea, and of all things which seem inanimate as well. Aleph am I, the patient burden bearer, strong to carry the heavy load of the manifest. Aleph am I, the eternal worker, by whose might all fields are tilled, and from whose life all seeds derive their growth and increase. Aleph am I, the first and the root. From my unfathomable will, the universe has its beginning. In my boundless wisdom are the types and patterns of all things. Before all worlds I was, in all worlds I am. When worlds are but a memory, I shall be.
So if you just let those words wash over you, that sense of approaching a mystery, that sense of being upheld, of being carried by the great ox, that is the root and the source of everything. That is the presence that's underneath all form, all activity, all shapes. My teacher Ernest Butler described the divine as the great artist who enters into his work of creation so that it is not separate from that which is shaped, and yet is always separate from what is shaped. Ernest Butler, my teacher, used to describe his sense of the divine as being like a great artist who enters into the work, fully enters into the work of creation, is fully one with it, and yet is entirely separate from it. So one of the images that Ernest used in his teaching is the image of the fool of the tarot. And one of his ways of understanding the great work is to see it as the journey of the fool, which we're going to talk a bit about this weekend, really. And there's various meditations we'll do that will kind of link to that. Now the fool is the fool of the tarot is the random factor. Fool is the number given to the tarot trump, the fool, is zero. And the many different images of the fool in the way the tarot has developed over the centuries. But one of the earliest images is a sort of raggedy, beggarly figure with a knapsack, with a dog biting it on the bottom and kind of pushing it along, tearing its clothes, and sort of, so it's a profoundly undignified image. You know, we might imagine that we're a long way from the quality of the magician. You know, we have the magician as a skillful, balanced figure. Yeah, the fool's a mess, stumbling along, kind of making faces, gurning, kind of bitten on the bottom and just jumping along, or we've got other cards where he's capering on the edge of an abyss and about to fall off. And you know what's being shown here is a complicated mystery. I mean, the image of the fool comes out of the fool at the, so the, I mean, the tarot trumps come out of medieval Italy, and the images are the sort of archetypal images that you apply to a medieval world in a way. Now the fool in a medieval court is the sort of fool, the jester, who is this kind of mad figure who disrupts everything. You know, you get this classic image of a jester's hat with bells, and he wears this ridiculous motley costume with colours that clash, and has a little wand with a little kind of jester's head on it, or sometimes he has a sort of a blown up bladder on a stick that he whacks people with. Because the fool is the only person, in a sense, who can speak truth to power, who can speak to the king and say ludicrous things, and he is deliberately, consciously foolish, because he is a disruptive energy, the energy of life that just spontaneously flowers, moves, goes in a particular direction. Who disrupts the known, who disrupts the order of things. The Christian church is a feast, they call the feast of fools sometimes, where everything is turned upside down. So we're looking really at a profound, in this place of ending and beginning, we're looking at a profound shift.
We're not in the world of the magician, the way where we're at the altar, allowing, knowing what we're doing, adopting the form of the magician, nothing wrong with that. But here we're in a different place, here we're in a deeper place.
Deeper.
It's beyond the understanding of the fool. Spontaneity of the fool is beyond, incorporates and is beyond the place of the magician. The fool can appear as the magician, but it can appear as many other things. Fool is a trick. Yes, the aspect of the an aspect of the fool is the trickster. So the fool can trick, but the fool can be any form, any shape.
So the trickster appears somewhere else in the trap.
Well, a trickster is an aspect of the magician in some ways. A trickster, in some ways, is that kind of is that kind of shadow side of the magician. Okay, well, like, yeah, we got one each. So, Ellie, you go. You haven't got one, are you? Okay. So. No, I haven't finished giving them out, that's why.
The fool's at work here.
I'm not being brought back from my meditation by that dog bark. That's not
very... Yeah. So I just want you, just for a moment, we've got 20 minutes left for lunch. Just want you to look at these two images either side. These are the two of the early. This image here is one of the is the earliest is one of the earliest images now, and this is from the Visconti Sforza pack, which was an elite pack really created by the Visconti Sforza family.
So this
one. So that's in the original. This is a painting in gold with a gold leaf background, and what you see is the fool standing upon the green earth, coming out of now. When you see a gold leaf background like this, obviously it's probably very beautiful, but it also indicates that it's a convention that comes out of icon painting, where the figure is emerging out of divine light. So here we have the fool with feathers in his hair, kind of, he's half undressed, looking rather wan and sort of, but standing, so coming out of the light, standing on the earth. If we flip it over, this is a very early Marseillais pack. This is a printed pack, and the printing was often not very good. So you can see the printing colours are outside the lines. So here you can see the dog biting. The fool's got his trousers torn. He's being bitten. He's got this. He's in this strange kind of motley. He's looking up at the air. He's looking a bit sort of out of it, and he's on his journey. Well, it's like a walking stick that he's leaning on, basically. He's just leaning on a walking stick. Now here, these are perhaps more ones we may know a little better.
Okay.
So one side we've got the Waitsmith fool, the other side we've got the Thoth Cruelly fool. Now, if you look at the Crowley one for a moment, here we've got this rather wild, this very dramatic figure. We've got a tiger biting him on the thigh. We've got lots of symbolism, but the interesting thing, if you look at the way his feet are, he's sort of jumping out of the card. He's just propelling himself. He's not standing up. He's just jumping forward, and we've got all these kind of forms, images. Life energy. He's standing on a crocodile, because he's a combination of Bacchus. He's got horns. He's got a crystal pyramid on his head. He's represented, in a classically Crowleyan way. There's this full symbolism here of this figure jumping into this creative kind of world, filling these forms with this green, mysterious kind of life. His eyes are wide open because he's looking at everything, he's seeing everything. And he's open to all possibilities. Got fire in one hand, he's holding a crystal in the other. There's a bunch of grapes. He's got a huge bag of coins with the qualities of all the elements and the planets on them.
Is that coming out of divine energy?
Yes, it's that breath life, it's that creative life energy, exactly that. He's coming out of that. And so he's stepping into the whole coruscating field of life, not held back, not adopting any position, completely fluid, completely spontaneous.
He's still supported by those circles.
Well, the circles are rising sort of out of him and around him. They come out of his heart, so they're generated. So you look at where they come from. They arise. The circles arise and return to his heart, so they're spinning around him.
And the flowers. And the flowers previously.
Well, the flowers again represent sexuality, life energy, the flowering of life. We've got these images around coming around the circle. You've got the white dove and the butterfly. We've got a caduceus wand. So again, these are just representing the kind of creative energies of life. And the image of this card, when you look at it, it's very full on. He's coming towards you, coming in a very full on. Here I am. Here we are. Live, be.
That's a complete antithesis of the fool and the
witch. Well, you could say that, but on the other hand, the fool, if we swap it over, again we've got the same golden kind of background. We've got this, because the fool here is about to step off. He's just about to, that he's got this...
But he looks unconscious, whereas that's unconscious.
Well, yes, the in a way, I suppose it depends on how we look at it. Yes, I mean, this is the classic image of the fool who's kind of looking up but not quite looking where he's going. He's a sort of, it's the other side of consciousness. It's the heedlessness. If you like, the open eyes of the Crowley fool is kind of, is just absorbing everything and letting everything flow through. So we're not in, and how Pamela Coleman Smith has depicted this is you're in the heights here, you're in this snowy place, you've got this white sun, and this figure is just, and he's got this kind of robe with wheels upon it, hidden within the white bit and of the top of the robe, hidden within that the letters of the divine name Yud He Vav He. Can't see it very clearly, but that's in there. And he wears a green laurel crown, and you've got this red feather that represents the energy of desire. And it's stepping off. He's about to fall off into what? We don't know.
Or is he looking at the divine?
Yeah.
No, the divine is behind him, right? The divine is the white sun. He's looking up. He's not really looking anywhere.
No.
Right? That's the thing. This is not the whole thing about this particular path and this particular thing. It's not like the magician card. It's the antithesis of the magician card. It's the opposite side of the tree. The kind of balanced form. Here we're in spontaneity, randomness, moving around, falling over, getting up, seeing what happens next.
The not looking feels not like something unaware. It's an act of will to not look.
Well, it's not even will. We're beyond that, right? So we're beyond will here. Yes, it is profound. Involves a profound trust, but it's even beyond these things. It just is the nature of the divine presence to be, to create, to manifest, to appear in whatever way it does.
Commune.
Commune.
Yeah.
Well, communion is part of that, right? So because that, if you like, we're looking at a presence that appears, that is right, that is both entirely separate from us and both most intimate to us. You know, that's right, nearer am I to thee than the pulse of your own jugular vein. No human comes near to me. Right? It's that's the power, the continual paradox of this path. Being with that which is completely transcendent, completely immanent. And the work of this path is to relax into that, to allow that presence to fully come through us. Right at the heart of this path is the nature of love, love at its deepest. That capacity, that union of will and love, where we delight in every form that appears. No matter how unfinished, no matter how incomplete, no matter how disturbed, it's the capacity here of the divine to look on it and say, I know that this is good. This is the phrase you get from the very beginning of Genesis, and the Lord God looked at the world and said that it was good. Tov, it is good. However it is tov.
Situation.
Yeah, it is very difficult. It's very difficult to see it in that way.
But that's where the paradigm shifts from spontaneity. It's such a source of optimism.
Yeah. I'm going to read you another poem. Bye. Great medieval Kabbalist Solomon Ibn Jabiral. This is called Keta. This poem is called Keta Malchut. So this is both the union of Keta and Malchut, the beginning of the tree, the end of the tree. It begins by, this is his prayer really, this is Ibn Jabiral. Lord, your works are wondrous, I know it acutely. Yours is the greatness and the power and the glory, the splendor and the majesty. Yours is the kingdom exalted above all. So he's naming here the spheres of the tree of life. Yours is all wealth and all honor. All beings above and below you bear witness that they will perish while you endure. Yours is the strength within whose mystery our minds eventually fail. Your force exceeds their intensity. Yours is the hidden chamber of power, or forms, secret, and matter. Yours the name that eludes the wise, and the might to bear the world in its void, and the craft to bring what's hidden to light. Yours is the kindness that infuses creation, and the goodness veiled for those who hold you in awe. Yours is the secret no notion contains, and life that destruction will not bring down,
and the throne raised higher than the idea of height, and the hidden hall in the heavenly mansion. Yours is the real which becomes existence in light's reflection, and in whose shadow we live. Yours the two worlds and the border between them, one for action and one for reward. Yours the reward reserved for the righteous in spirit, for whom it was hidden. You saw it was good and concealed it. You are one, prior to all computation, and ground to all figuration. You are one, and your oneness's mystery amazes the wise, who've never known what it was. You are one, and in your oneness know neither loss nor addition, neither lack nor magnification. You are one, but not as one that's counted or formed, for neither enhancement nor change pertains to you, neither description nor name. You are one, and my speech cannot establish your boundary or line. Therefore I said, I will guard my ways, so as not to sin with my tongue. And you are one, sublime and exalted above all that might fall. That one might fall is impossible. You abide beyond the range of the ear in its hearing and the eye in its seeing, ungoverned by how and where and when. You abide in a being unto its own, and not for another to come. You abide, and before the beginning of time were there, the placeless place of the world. You abide, and your forms obscure and beyond detection, and deeper than all revelation. You are alive, though not established in time, and not of a time that's known. You are alive, though not in spirit and soul, for you are soul to spirit soul. You are alive, but not like breath in a man, whose end is the moth and the worm. You are alive, and those who reach your secret discover delight in the world, and eat and live forever. You are vast. And against your vastness, all vastness gives in, and every virtue's a failing. You are vaster than thought and lifted beyond any chariot. You are vaster than all dimension, exalted above all blessing and praise. You are strong, and nothing in all your work and creation can bring about what you've wrought in your strength and your action. You are strong through a strength that's total, that knows neither change nor reversal. You are strong, and show in your majesty mercy in your anger, and for sinners suppress your wrath. You are strong, and your mercies are readied for all creation, and this is strength everlasting. You are the light of the upper regions and the eye of every soul that's pure will take you in. And the clouds of sin in the sinner's soul obscure you. Your invisible light in the world will be seen in the world to come on the mountain of God. You are the light everlasting, the eye of the mind longs to behold, and may yet glimpse, but the whole of will not see. You are the God of gods and the Lord of lords, the ruler of all that's above and below. You are Lord, as all creation bears witness, and the name in whose honour all men are obliged in worship to serve. You are Lord, and every creature serves you. Nothing detracts from your glory, nor those who worship without you, for the drive of all is to reach you. Though they resemble men who are blind, walking along the way of the king and going astray, sinking in the pit of destruction, slipping in the trap of deception, certain they'll reach their haven as each one labours in vain. But your servants are wiser and walk in their own integrity, turning neither to the right or the left, and coming to the court of the king. You are Lord. All creation relies on your godliness. All creatures feast on your oneness. You are Lord, and there is no distinction between your being, divine and one, between your past and the real, between what you were and will be. All is a single mystery. Though its name may alter in aspects, all towards a single place move on. You are wise, and wisdom is a fountain and source of life welling up from within you. You are wise and prime to all that's primeval, as though you were wisdom's tutor. You are wise, but your wisdom wasn't acquired. You didn't derive it from another. You are wise, and your wisdom gives rise to an endless desire in the world as within an artist or worker, to bring out the stream of existence from nothing, like light flowing from sight's extension. drawing from the source of light without vessel, giving it shape without tools, hewing and carving, refining, making pure. He calls to nothing which splits, becomes existence, pitched like a tent in the world as it spread beneath the sky. With desire's span, the Lord established the heavens as his hand coupled the tent of the planets with loops of skill, weaving creation's pavilion. The links of his will reaching the lowest rung of creation, the curtain of the outermost edge of the spheres. Come back to the rest of the poem later on. But what Ibn Jabir all is trying to say, is trying to describe this almost impossible kind of mystery. So he's using a very fine poet, he's using lots of images that where we're looking at something, this presence that is both impossible to describe, impossible to reach, and yet completely, intimately, presently with us. The living fool, who is everywhere in every form, adopting every position, who is the random factor, who is the place of a place that disrupts our perceptions, our expectations, our unknown world. I always remember, many years ago, I was working with a guy who had very severe alcohol problems and was in a terrible mess. And he was talking, and doing really well. I mean, he was really kind of on the road to recovery. But he'd been telling me about the moment it all changed for him. And he was in the most awful situation, really. He was homeless, he had nowhere to be and go. His health was in a terrible place. And he remembers just crying out. He didn't even know to what he was crying out. He was asked, but he was genuinely asking and open for help. And he said, for a moment, the air went golden. Just for a moment. And like I still, as I remember now, I've got sort of pinned in the, I've got goosebumps, because it that was the moment where the fool takes his hands. And in that moment, he's not alone. In that moment, he touches a completely different universe from the encapsulated universe of the known. The reason why the fool is essential is that our own creativity, our own kind of capacity to shape the world places a limitation upon us. I think we are encapsulated within our own knowing of who we think we are and how we think the universe is. And that, as we develop, that knowing can be very, very subtle, very kind of and almost transparent, but still is a boundary, still is a barrier, still is a place of separation. So that's why when we come to the deepest part of the path, we have to abandon all that. To enter into the terrifying experience of the living world, the living presence in the living world that cannot be controlled. We have to enter into the dance. Lunchtime, so let's leave it there.
But is that similar to the story? Oh. about how you were going to Egypt and that you entered into a different world.
Yes, you have to enter into the dance. It's literally, that's absolutely it. It's that choice to enter into. So yeah, that choice of entering the dance is to join with whatever is happening and to not hold back. That's exactly the place that is asked of us, really.